Anvold Financial Group.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Justice and Drew Show. I am your host today, Brian McDaniel from the Wrong About Everything podcast. Once again, joined by former Senate Majority Leader Amy Koch.
Good morning. That was some music, Brian.
Giddy up. We got Brianne in the booth, and we are joined for another segment by Brian Strauser and Rob Dorr from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus.
Good morning.
We want to hear from you. We've been talking debates. We've been talking gun regulation coming from the Democratic candidates. So give us a call at 651-989-5855. Guys, kind of continuing with ticking down the list of hopefuls. One of the things that Eric Swalwell, this just in, is from California. One of the things that he's talking about is, you know, he has been praising a New Zealand style gun buyback. And I remember, you know, right after, you know, the really horrific shooting at the mosque in New Zealand, that their government was, you know, praised by the left and certainly praised by people on our podcast for, you know, for taking strong, decisive, quick action by instituting a buyback in New Zealand. How's that going, guys?
Well, I mean, so we should be clear, the New Zealand buyback is not, it is a buyback, but it's a mandatory buyback. If you do not submit your firearms to the government by, I think their deadline's in December, then you're their equivalent of a felon. So it's mandatory.
Yeah, it's not like what we see here where, you know, some organization gets a government grant and decides they're going to go set up shop in a parking lot and buy back all the guns that they never sold you. Yeah, Minneapolis PD being one. And they do these buybacks. And as you can see, the compliance rate in New Zealand is just shockingly low. I think it's, you know, less than 1,000 rifles out of the 1.5 million, 1.3 million.
Yeah, I think it was 1.5 million. And the article that I read said that there were 700 firearms that were,
but they don't actually know because they didn't have registration. Yeah. They just had licensing of gun owners, so they don't really know how many firearms are in the mix. And it's always interesting too when these topics come up, because the other side on this issue always asks, why does registration scare you so much? Well, because then you can do this.
Yeah.
Right. Well, because now they have at least an idea of somebody who at least was thinking about buying a gun. So when only a few thousand people turn in their guns.
Well, and there were people, like, immediately after they started this, there were people in New Zealand who were receiving letters from the police saying, hey, we know you're a gun owner. You need to turn these guns in.
Right.
And so that's just indicative. It's, you know, you always sound tinfoil hatty when you say that registration leads to confiscation.
But it does.
And that's not always, not every registration leads to confiscation, but every confiscation starts with a registration.
Yeah.
And it's certainly enough to give you pause. When you actually look at about the efficacy, though, that's what I look at, is we're talking about all of these policies that make you feel good. And I listened to the podcast where your cohorts were praising them for their strong action, but doesn't actually do anything. And that's what makes it so frustrating in the world that we're living in right now. It doesn't matter whether what you want to do is actually going to have the effects that you're seeking, as long as you try, as long as you get really upset about it, as long as you cry, you know, then you're a good and moral and ethical and upstanding person. I much rather focus on things that will actually yield positive results instead of this hyper rhetorical, you know, nonsense of things. We've got one instance of the Minneapolis buyback that just shows just how ridiculous these things are.
Yeah, Minneapolis last did a gun buyback in 2015. And as Rob said, this almost always starts with somebody gets a grant. In this case, it was the Pillsbury United Communities who gave the money, gave gift cards for Minneapolis to execute this at two locations in North Minneapolis. And the great example of this was highlighted by City Pages, who showed a slam fire shotgun. And if you've never seen this, this is a 2x4 with two pieces of pipe and some duct tape wrapped around it. That is a functional shotgun. And so this was made by one of our activists who then went and turned it in and got $200 gift card. And in the process of doing so, in the line, saved a World War II carbine rifle, which I now own, from somebody that was going to turn it in to be destroyed because didn't want it anymore.
A great piece of history.
A great piece of history would have gone to the shredder.
And
exactly.
Okay.
We've tossed up a picture of this this shotgun too on our Facebook and Twitter page.
What was it called? What
it's a slam fire
shotgun.
So yeah, for those of you who
it works.
Yeah, if you look at Gun Owners Caucus on Facebook or Gun Owners MN on Twitter, you can see a picture of this. Basically, I mean, you've got a fixed piece of wood with a fixed metal pipe, and then there's something that hits the firing pin, a nail or you know something along those lines, that's all fixed. And then you load a shotgun shell into the other tube, you slam it into the nail, and it works just like there's no trigger or anything. Don't do this. Don't try this at home. But it was fun to do that and to watch it be turned in. But at the end of the day, this is what gets turned into buybacks. It is people's rusted junk that's been sitting in their shed or their attic. It's something that they found. There are a lot of broken firearms that go through their thing, firearms with missing parts and things like that. It's not the gang members and the repeat criminals who are, you know, causing the actual violence that are turning this stuff in, unless maybe they've got a stolen gun that's hot, that's they've used in too many murders that they want to offload with no questions asked. Beyond that, this doesn't have any efficacy, and there's been study after study to show that that these buybacks have absolutely no public safety impact.
Well, when I looked at New Zealand about why it's not working, there was a couple things that stood out. One was I know nothing about, you know, the thoughts of the populace in New Zealand, whether they would be similar to, you know, gun owners here, or whether they were all just going to willingly say, here, take our guns. But, you know, a lot of people, it seemed like, weren't turning in their guns because they thought this was going to be overturned. So they didn't want to turn in their guns, have the order overturned. And then also some of them are planning on suing because they feel like they're getting like 30 cents on the dollar for the guns. Because like on the podcast, when we were discussing this, you know, one of the things I brought up was how ridiculously expensive it would be, not only for New Zealand to do something like this, but certainly United States of America. But I guess one way to get around the cost is to lowball everybody significantly.
Right. Yeah, and give them no other alternative. Yeah. You can't transfer it out of the state.
I mean, the equivalent of that here is the bump stock ban, which was banned through regulation, not by statute, and is being challenged in court. There's zero compensation for that for folks who owned bump stocks, and there are hundreds of thousands of bump stocks that were owned by U.S. citizens.
We want to hear from you guys. Give us a call at 651-989-5855.
Okay, so first of all, guys, thank you for the work that you do. And I don't think you toot your horn enough, but can you give the website again? Because I just want to say that these guys are constant sources. Like, all the stuff you're talking about, I had no idea what a slam. I've already forgot the name.
Slam fire.
But every time I talk to you, I learn something. And I know you're just out and at the Capitol all the time, educating in a really thoughtful, smart way. So thank you. And it's gunownersmn.mn.
Yeah, the website is gunowners.mn. And you can find us on Facebook as Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, and the same on Twitter and Instagram.
So then my question is, because you said, you know, a lot of these proposals, the efficacy is just, it's not been proven. I also know that as part of the discussion, we always talk about, like, you know, make sure that we're enforcing the laws that are already on the books. So what are those, a little bit on, like, what those look like, and are there some of those that you do find effective? I don't know if that makes sense. Question.
I mean, I'll start. It's really effective to take people who are prohibited, who are found in the possession of firearms and ammunition, and put them in jail. They are the most likely to commit violent crime. It is a state mandatory 5-year sentence, but judges under sentence this all the time in Minnesota. And federally, it's 5 years also, and it's rarely prosecuted federally. But I will say, under the current administration, there's been more of an emphasis for the U.S. attorneys to prosecute gun crimes. Gun crime prosecution federally is way up. It is way below what it probably needs to be.
And I'm gonna go a little bit broader than this, because I think one of the fundamental misunderstandings, especially in Minnesota, is what gun violence in quotes actually is. And so when you say that, people are imagining, you know, the domestic shootings and gang violence and violent crime and homicides and all of those things. But when you hear these, you know, gun control advocates use the word gun violence, what they're saying, they're also lumping in suicides, because that's the most effective way to make their arguments work. Because nationally, about 60% of all firearm deaths are suicides. In Minnesota, 78%. 78% of our firearm deaths are suicides. And so they lump it all together in order to sell this idea that these laws will reduce all of these, you know, 400 or so firearm deaths that we have a year in Minnesota. And
78%
of them are suicides.
Gun deaths in Minnesota are suicides.
Right. So what, when you look at suicides, when you look at homicides, they're vastly different public safety issues with vastly different methods of approach of resolution. So that's what one of the, some of the work that I do at the Capitol, you know, most of what it is actually trying to separate and identify problems. So when we're talking about the suicide issue, suicide rates are rising. That's an issue, but that's these licensing buybacks, and none of that matters. The most common demographic for a suicide in Minnesota is a older white man, usually a farmer, out in greater Minnesota. People who aren't ineligible from owning firearms, people who probably own guns their whole lives. So none of these gun control plans are going to actually do anything.
Well, and to that specific point, I know at the legislature this year, one of the real focuses that had bipartisan support was mental health for rural
Greater Minnesota
rural farmers.
Yeah, Jeannie Poppe had a bill for that.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's take a call. We got Jim from Stillwater wants to talk about red flag laws, but first of all, Jim, are you going to come see me at the Tilted Tiki tomorrow night?
Maybe. I'm also an
that's a no.
I work for Lyft, so I'll probably be just taking people there to see you.
Cool. Well, you want to talk about red flag laws. Thanks for calling in.
Yes. So I've been a gun owner all my life, raised around guns, and you know, what you hear, and it's always a slippery slope, is, well, we need to have these red flag laws. Well, my question is what the heck is a red flag? And I'll just give you a quick scenario. I met a gentleman a couple years ago who had never owned a gun in his life, bought an AR-15, and wanted me to teach him how to hunt. And the whole time I was with him for 2 hours, all he could talk about was how he was going to kill his neighbors if they gave him a hard time.
Hmm.
Well, I turned him into the sheriff. And the sheriff said, yes, we can investigate that. So to me, that was a red flag. But my concern is, if someone owns 20 guns and has 5,000 rounds of ammunition, is that considered a red flag?
It's clearly an arsenal.
I'm a law-abiding citizen. I have two different concealed carry permits. At what point are these politicians going to make that, a person like me, a red flag?
Well, the bar was significantly lower this last legislative session. When you look at the types of people in, we're talking about Minnesota legislature, the types of people who could issue a red flag order would be anybody who you resided with or who you have ever resided with, anybody who you have a romantic relationship with, anybody whom you've ever had a romantic relationship with, anybody related to you by blood. All of these people could just make a generalized statement of being in fear for their life, with no burden of proof, a modest burden of proof, preponderance of the evidence, which, again, this is from one side of the story, so when there's no counterbalance to the story being told, anything can be a preponderance of the evidence. Mm-hmm. And they would issue these orders, and the first and last thing you know is you have the sheriffs knocking on your doors saying, hey, hand over your firearms.
Right, so if a person has a stepdaughter who is an anti-gunner and a complete liberal was to say, my stepfather owns all these guns and he's crazy, what defense do we have? And, you know, in our country today, you are guilty until you can prove yourself innocent. It's not the other way around. And that's what really concerns me. And that's why I give a lot of money to the NRA. So I'll let you go with that. But thanks for the conversation.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Jim. Getting back to efficacy, let's stay on red flag laws for a little bit, because, you know, one of the things that Rob's been talking about is, you know, you can implement these things, but, you know, does it actually help? You know, for jurisdictions that have red flag laws, what have the numbers shown? I think I remember for the last shooting in Colorado, they have red flag laws. And
why, also, as Jim said, he went to the sheriff and he reported this person. Now, he didn't fall under the qualifications that you said, which were live with, romantic relationship, have before, previous. He didn't fall under any of that, but anybody could report someone on suspicious behavior.
And the sheriffs, under the red flag laws could have issued a red flag order on that law enforcement is also included in that.
So, oh, okay. The courts have to. The courts have to.
The courts have to decide. Right. The law enforcement could petition.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
But one of my favorite examples of the red efficacy of red flags goes back to Connecticut, because they're the ones who are always propped up on a pedestal. Because every time you hear them talk about Connecticut, you hear that their firearm suicide rates declined after they did red flag laws, which sounds really fantastic. You know, okay, that makes sense. But the question is, how did the rest of their suicide rates go? And their rest of their suicide rates went up. Their firearm, their raw numbers, which isn't populated, population adjusted, but their raw numbers of firearm suicides didn't go down. They still went up. What happened was more the firearm suicides were being offset by people killing themselves with other means. So here we have all these gun control advocates patting themselves on the back saying, yay, we reduced firearm suicides in Connecticut. They didn't reduce the suicide rate. 2017, which is the last year they had data, was their highest suicide numbers ever in Connecticut. And so they're patting themselves on the back, you know, for essentially for saying, well, at least they didn't kill themselves with a gun. And for us and for me, I'm far more interested in getting people who are in crisis the help that they need rather than lamenting over what type of methods of suicide that they use.
And the Connecticut data is echoed in what we see internationally. Like, Japan comes up a lot for tight firearms laws, but their suicide rate is off the chart. All it did is shift the method to something else.
Canada and the U.S. have almost identical suicide rates. They choose rope more often.
This another thing that passed this year at the legislature was school safety money. Because obviously, when you hear about a tragedy at a school, that I think there was it 20 or 30 million that was put in the budget for that. What are your thoughts?
I know they
or
were
do
going
you not
to
have a position on.
No. We were very active in this. There's a lot of things that we do that we don't make a whole lot of noise about. Usually, when we're working on school safety and things like that, we don't kind of want the toxicity of our issue to pollute the matter at hand. So it's not something we will fill committee hearings for and things like that. So we kind of do that quietly, but you know, it's certainly something we supported, and I personally spent a lot of time at the Capitol working on. And when we look at the school safety, giving them money to be able to actually look at their situation. So there's a couple of different opportunities that they have. They can do infrastructure increases off of the Safe Schools Levy. There's the School Safety Center the Department of Public Safety got some additional money. But that all of that keeps our kids safe from all potential threats, not just firearms. It's not just singularly focused on that.
Well, we need to take a break. You can call in at 651-989-5855. This is the Justice and Drew Show on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, FM 103.5. And please listen to us anywhere on the iHeart
1130.
Welcome back and good morning. You're listening to the Justice and Drew Show. I am your host for the beginning of this week, Brian McDaniel from the Wrong About Everything podcast. I am joined by my partner in crime, Amy Koch.
Good morning, everyone.
We have Brianne in the booth, and we have Brian Strauser
good
and
morning.
Rob Dorr from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus in with us. And before we take a couple of calls, a listener tweeted at me saying, where may I find those homicide stats you folks were chatting about this morning? I want to share them. Thanks. Where would be the best place for them to find that?
Two locations, the FBI Uniform Crime Reports, which are online at the FBI's website. You can also look at the Minnesota Department of Public Safety for Minnesota-specific data, and the Minnesota Department of Health if you want to get into the suicide information.
All right. Well, hey, are you guys ready?
Giddy up.
You don't look ready. Don from Burnsville, welcome back.
Hi. I was looking up some of those statistics you were talking about, and you're correct about the AR-15.
All right, good call.
I also found that 18 states plus the District of Columbia have tightened up on background checks for the purchase of guns. And there, they reduced the average gun violence by 50%. So why wouldn't you want to do the same in other states?
Hey, Don, we have reduced our gun violence rate by 60% over the last 25 years without these, as have many other states. So why would we want to? We're beating 50% as is.
All right, I think we lost Don.
No.
Let's go Gordy from the Twin Cities. You have a comment. Thanks for calling in, Gordy.
Hi.
It's Gordy?
Yeah.
I just want to point out, you talked your percentage of the deaths from gun or gun violence, high percentage of suicide. A few years ago, and actually it was more than a few years ago, and I believe it was Time magazine had an article, and it showed a little picture of everybody that died from a gunshot on that particular day, and there was a little 2-3 sentence write-up on what happened. And the four categories that took out almost everybody, number one was suicide, second is love triangle, third was drugs, and the fourth one is the sad one where people leave loaded pistols in their bedside drawer and the little kid gets it and shoots his sister or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't do those four things, your probabilities of getting killed by a gun go way, way down and approach zero. And those are things that you shouldn't be doing.
Yep. Yeah. There have been people, number crunchers who have run the numbers.
Thank you, Gordy.
Yeah. Thanks, Gordy. People who've run the numbers and said, basically, if you're not engaged in criminal activity, your likelihood of dying at a firearm is something in the magnitude of like winning the lottery and getting struck by lightning on the same day.
One of the things that at the Capitol on not just gun issues, but on many issues, is we look to our neighboring states, not wanting Minnesota to be, you know, an island, whether it be taxes or something else. What do our surrounding states do? Do they do more than us? Do they do less than us? Kind of what's the general situation there?
I mean, we can go state by state, but the surrounding states generally, when it comes to gun rights, are ahead of us. In terms of the laws that are in place, particularly constitutional carry, stand your ground, and kind of related laws. I mean, I'll just start with Iowa, and we can kind of run around the horn. But last year, Iowa passed an omnibus gun bill. It wasn't a gun control bill. It was an omnibus gun rights bill. It contained multiple pages of stand your ground, changes to their concealed carry laws, changes on where you can carry a firearm, all lightning restrictions that were already in place, making it easier, I think, and more acceptable from a gun rights standpoint than what we've seen in other states. So that's one example, I think, of what we've seen.
And then we've got North Dakota and South Dakota. South Dakota just passed constitutional carry. Mm-hmm. North Dakota did a couple years ago. Wisconsin has constitutional open carry. So if you wanted to open carry, you can do so without needing a permit.
What is constitutional carry?
So constitutional carry is making the permit to carry optional. If you are allowed to possess a firearm, then you are allowed to carry that firearm. There's still, you know, time and place restrictions. You can't carry into a jail. You can't, you know, there's the kind of common sense things that real common sense things that you'd expect to see.
Careful with that word.
Yeah, right. Careful with that phrase.
Right. I mean, and we've proposed constitutional carry here in the state over the last multiple legislative sessions. We had a hearing in 2017.
The last two bienniums, yeah.
Yeah, last two bienniums. And we just made, in the way we approached it, was to make the permit to carry optional. You need the permit to carry in order to carry in other states in a lot of instances. Most states will, even they have constitutional carry, will require you to have a permit if you're not a resident of that state.
Right. So basically, it removes that barrier of entry to the exercise of a constitutional right. It removes you needing to pay a poll tax in order to exercise your right to carry. It doesn't change the person who's eligible to own the firearm one modicum. If you're a felon, if you're a domestic abuser, if you're diagnosed mentally ill, or if you're adjudicated mentally ill, none of you are allowed to possess firearms. Therefore, you can't carry it.
Mm-hmm. What about Wisconsin?
Wisconsin, they passed their, they had their constitutional open carry for a while, and then they passed their concealed carry legislation. It was a bit weird. You could carry openly in Wisconsin, but you couldn't carry concealed. What was it, 6 years ago?
Five or six years back.
Wisconsin passed theirs, and they immediately, within a couple months, bypassed Minnesota's number of permit to carry holders, primarily because they accepted DNR hunter safety education. They accepted prior military or law enforcement. Any NRA course. So a lot of these people had their hunting licenses and their firearm safety there. So they were able to just go that day. And also the fee was $10.
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota sheriffs charge generally between $40 and $100. Here in the metro, you're going to pay $100 for your first permit.
Now, you know, my wife is a teacher. I have three kids in public school. There's a lot of focus on school safety, and we talked about that a little bit. But, you know, also, and Brian, the other Brian, and I were talking about both being born in Illinois. Chicago has pretty restrictive gun laws. However, every weekend we get these insane number of shootings and murders. You know, we only have about a minute left, but you know, the cities that have, you know, these strict gun controls, you know, does it do anything?
No. So the issue, I should point out, so Chicago used to basically prohibit firearms. That got taken out in a Supreme Court case, the McDonald v. Chicago case in 2010. And Illinois now has state preemption, which means Chicago can't pass its own gun laws anymore. So for the most part, Chicago is like the rest of the state in terms of the way their gun laws are. But even when they had a total ban on private possession of firearms, handguns and rifles, Chicago's crime rate was out of control.
50 to 100 shootings every weekend.
Yeah, they had 54 people wounded over the weekend.
This weekend.
Well, we need to go to break. Brian Strausser, Rob Doerr from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, thank you so much. If people want to find you again, how do they do that?
Website's gunowners.mn, and you can find us on Facebook or Instagram and Twitter as the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus.
Well, that's fantastic. You are listening to the Justice and Drew Show on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, and please listen to us anywhere on the
AM 1130.
Good morning and welcome back to the Justice and Drew Show. I am your guest host for the beginning part of this week, Brian McDaniel from the Wrong About Everything podcast. I am joined by my podcast partner and former Senate Majority Leader Amy Koch.
And friend.
Good friend.
Who gets up at 6 or 5 a.m. to come in here and be with you, which is awesome.
Some of us got up at 4.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I am a morning person, but I didn't book time to get coffee. So if anyone wants to be a hero and they're in the St. Louis Park area.
Well, the real hero is Brianne in the booth, who keeps us from wrecking a major market radio morning talk show. So thank you, Brianne.
Oh, is that my cue to say you're welcome?
Got a lot of freedom and patriotism on this show. I like it for the 4th of July week.
Well, we introduced ourselves at the top of the show, but that was super early. Amy, remind everybody who you are.
Yep. So, served in the Minnesota Senate. I was a senator from the Wright County. And now I work with Brian at the St. Paul. And as you said, I'm the other Republican on Wrong About Everything podcast, which you can get on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts.
And please do that. Though we are taking this week off, we've decided that we're going to exercise our freedom to not have to come in on Friday. And
well, you know, when the 4th falls on a Thursday, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
We record.
Brianne, who also helps us on that show, is very upset that we're not taping this week.
I know.
Bummer. Anyway, so one of the things, as I said earlier, actually, we were not on the podcast together on Friday. One of the things that we talked about was our attorney general, Mr. Keith Ellison. He endorsed Bernie Sanders for president on Friday. Now, that's not a huge surprise because he has been a traditional Bernie supporter. But he kind of chose a close ideological ally over his fellow Minnesota Democrat, Senator Amy Klobuchar. And while that's consistent, you know, he's been a Bernie guy. It's a little bit of kicking some sand in Klobuchar's face, because she has been selling herself as somebody who can help you win the Midwest, but she's not going gangbusters in Iowa right now. And if she's not even inspiring enormous loyalty from Minnesota Democrats, you know, what does that say to, you know, the other people up on stage who may be looking at her as a potential VP candidate?
Yeah, so what I didn't understand about this one, as you said, it's consistent with Keith has been, Attorney General Ellison has been a Bernie person. When he ran for the DNC chair, he was a Bernie person when he served in Congress. But what I just don't understand is, like, why now? As we said, the Democrat field is it's massive. If you're going to come in for your person from your state just to you know, kind of be to play nice. I don't, you know, it wasn't as though Bernie needed the endorsement to kickstart, although, you know, his campaign is faltering.
Faltering, for sure.
For sure. But I mean, he has over, he has by far the number, highest number of Twitter followers. Like, you're not capturing a lot by the Attorney General of Minnesota endorsing. And I just don't understand what Keith Ellison got from this, except, like you said, it's a little bit in your face for our own U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar.
Well, and Ellison said in a statement, the most pressing issue of our time is inequality. For working class people, they can't really thrive and grow in this economy. That's not true. And Bernie is the best has the best prescriptions now over the course of time, has demonstrated the most consistent commitment to working families.
I mean, Klobuchar's has got a left flank problem, right? She's considered the moderate, one of the more moderate.
Well, and that's something, and a problem that both Klobuchar and Kamala Harris will have is that they were prosecutors. And, you know, for the progressive left, you know, there aren't many jobs that are held in lower esteem for the most part than prosecutors. Now, one thing that I think is curious is, you know, Bernie Sanders, he's 77, 78 years old. Old.
130.
Yeah, something like that. You know, and, you know, he certainly is, you know, on the progressive side, not on guns, but he is certainly the progressive side of the Democratic Party. But most, if not all, of his views are kind of shared by other people who are currently in contention for the Democratic nod. So I thought that when we're talking about, you know, so much is about, you know, racial this, you know, racial equality, you know, sexual equality, all of these different things, that Attorney General Ellison would pick a 70-something white guy
from Vermont
to kind of be to hold the banner for those principles. I just continue to find that odd. Not that somebody can't be a Bernie supporter. Hey, if that's your thing, that's your thing. But it just seems like that with Elizabeth Warren and some of these other people who are way to the left, that there aren't other choices that might be a little bit more, dare I say, progressive.
Right. Yeah, I didn't get it. But, you know, I guess only he can answer that question ultimately. Yeah, seemed like an odd pick to me.
Well, we have a special treat because just entering the studio right now is State Representative Jim Nash. How you doing, Jim?
Morning, sunshine.
Aw, thanks for coming in.
Good morning, Representative Nash. Don't butter him up. Honestly, he doesn't need any more of the.
No, he knows that I need all the support. I need more support than the troops. He knows that. What we're talking about, Jim, is we were talking about Attorney General Ellison and how he endorsed Bernie Sanders over Amy Klobuchar, and what this kind of leads us. Sorry.
No. So the thing that you're kind of getting into, which we touched on, with Rob and with Brian too, specifically on gun laws. But what is happening here are the Democrats are really going left. They're going left on a lot of issues. So they're going left on gun control issues. They're going left on the new Green Deal, which is, you know, kind of this super pie in the sky, energy green, put forward by the freshman congressman from New York, Ocasio-Cortez. They've all jumped on board with all of this stuff. And that wasn't the formula that was the win. That wasn't the winning formula for the 2018. When the Democrats won in 2018, I mean, Medicare for all. Like, they didn't run on that for healthcare. You know what they ran on? They said, hey, the Republicans, you know, even though they say they aren't, they're going to take away your pre-existing condition coverage because of their policies in healthcare. They ran on like a single healthcare issue that was a really clear, moderate, middle of the road, popular issue. That's not what this is. And I understand that, you know, this is a big, you know, primary and a bunch of they're going for the nomination. But I don't know how they bring that back to what was the formula for 2018.
Wow. Well, and, you know, Jim, you're in the Waconia area. But, you know, the Democrats, as Amy said, really did kind of try to present themselves as a reasonable alternative to the to the far right, and they painted everybody that way, whether mm-hmm. someone considered themselves that way or not, and certainly as an alternative to President Trump. And they are, you know, seeking the endorsement in a primary, and it's not uncommon for Republicans to fly to the right and, you know, Democrats to fly to the left under those scenarios. But, you know, I always say that the best thing for Republicans is for Democrats to act like Democrats. When Democrats act like Republicans, we sometimes are in trouble. You know, are they showing their true colors right now?
Well, they're going extra Democrat right here. I mean, they're if there was a pile of poker chips, they'd pushed everything into the table, in the middle of the table right now. So the Attorney General endorsing Bernie Sanders, one, that's going to make their annual dinner a little uncomfortable when Senator Klobuchar shows up. But yeah, so the Green New Deal, all these other crazy bananas policies that they've come up with, you know, require the removal of all airline travel, trucking, cars. You know, you can ride a camel across the U.S. or a draft horse or something, I guess. You know, so if you want to go see grandma in California, start wagon training now. But I think what this is emblematic of is that because Trump is getting so much media, they're going to the antipodal end on the on their issues. And the best way for them to get people to tell them they're smart, pretty, and that they love them is to go all in. And I think that from my perspective, this is delicious to watch. If you want to set up some election stuff for next year, please, for the love of Lutefisk, keep going left. That's going to make me deliriously happy.
We did not even mention, you know, doing away with student debt. And out of all of these things, so, as much as I care about these other issues, I sometimes go blind for a few minutes when I think of the utter stupidity of this, and I get pandering to a voting base. I get it. And for that, I maybe even have a slight amount of begrudging respect for them for having the fortitude, to do this. But as somebody who went to a state school, as somebody who was able to make it through, his undergrad without debt and through law school with only a little bit of debt, which I then paid off, I am so offended by this.
Well, exactly. And so I tweeted the other night after the second Democrat debate that if you had been playing a drinking game and your drink word was free, by about 10 minutes into the debate, you would have been hammered. Everything is free. Free college. Free this. Free that. Everything's free. All that essentially means is that business owners and people who have made a good living are going to be paying more and more and more for some of these cute little experiments. And I wonder, are people actually dumb enough to believe this? Or are they just saying, oh, so-and-so wants to give me free college, I'll vote for them.
Well, it's an easy message, especially on the college, because college debt is soaring. It is a massive bubble. And what I would just say as a Republican is we actually should be addressing this issue. Not at all in the way that Bernie Sanders and Ilhan Omar, where they just want to like pay off everyone's debt by some magic money, or as you said, by raising taxes and then paying it from the government. But it is a big issue. College tuition has been going up. And sort of the value for your degree has been going down. And we should deal with that. And so we should be talking about it, because I think what happens is when there is a void and there is this, and everyone knows there's a college loan bubble. Everyone knows that. And so instead of ignoring it, we should actually work to address the root of the problem. And then we would actually have a response to the very easy message, which is just, we're just going to give you money and all of a sudden your student loans are going to be gone. But that's like, not like real Ryan said, and that's not going to change
it. I put myself through college either through scholarships. So I look at that as something that I earned by doing well on my high school scores and some standardized tests. But also, you know, there's this thing called work. And I would like for a few folks to give it a try. Give it the old college try and recognize that when you earn that money on your own through shedding of sweat, that it's going to be a little easier. And, you know, Brian, you and I talked, I think last week, just about how offensive this is to say to someone like me, that while I paid cash, now somebody else is going to have their debt forgiven. How about, kicking me a couple of shekels if that's the case. And they're not even talking about that part.
So, no, yeah. And you know, we can take it to the ridiculous extreme and say, okay, well, you know, it's not okay to have medical debt. It's not okay, and this is what we talked about, not okay to have educational debt. What type of debt is acceptable? What about, you know, you have problems with your house. If you're underwater on your house, are they going to take care of that? That's why this makes such little sense. And also, when you think about, you know, whatever the percentages of people who don't go to college, you know, right. Either they go right to work or they go into a trade or something like that. To tell them, well, you know what? Your taxes now are going to go and subsidize somebody who wanted to find themselves at NYU with a philosophy degree. And, you know, we also talked about the old TV show Northern Exposure, where yeah. there was a doctor who got sent to Alaska and his loan was paid off. You know, I know that things like that do exist right now, but something like that is so much more reasonable, where you would then be in service to the right. people who are helping you with it. But just this flat out saying, whatever you did in the past, the choices you made, no matter what those choices were, political science, you know,
medieval French poetry
or engineering, even, no matter what it is yeah. that we're going to pay off your debt. It's just nonsensical.
Well, right. So one of the things that I've carried at the Capitol and tried to get done, and you guys actually commented in my office as you are also both lobbyists. I tried to get passed a bill that would put kids in high school into a program that's a lot like our current PSEO program, so that while they're going to high school, they can get dual enrollment credit and learn how to be a welder or work in a CNC shop or become a carpenter. Because here's the thing, we can't build houses fast enough in the state of Minnesota. And we have jobs that are all over the metro that are blue collar jobs. And by the time you're in for about 4 to 5 years, you're making $80,000. So you leave high school, your friend leaves high school and goes to college, you go to work in one of these places, you're going to have a fantastic job 4 or 5 years in, and you're going to have zero debt. And this is all predicated on the notion that everybody must go to college, which I think is garbage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we were all in high school and we're reasonably close in age, we were all told, well, if you don't go to college, little Johnny, you're not worth anything. Well, BS. My kid's in the Navy. Senator, you were in the Air Force.
Yeah.
What a fantastic way to get an initial leg up and then begin your career after that, or make it your career. So, you know, the whole notion of Uncle Sugar is going to come along and pay for everything. Good grief.
Well, and, you know, I teach at Concordia, and I teach, you know, American government. And one of the things that we're learning is that kids can't afford to take credits anymore that don't lead to their degree. So you're seeing that they're losing, you know, the humanities, or losing political science, or losing history a little bit. So the cost of college is affecting the education that people are getting. And that's certainly something that's going to have repercussions going into the future. We need to go to break. We want to hear from you. 651-989-5855. You're listening to the Justice and Drew Show on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, FM 103.5. And please listen to us anywhere on that.